a snake on my back. I keep a red bone on my side.
Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuning in live this Tuesday, July 17th, 2018 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. And a wild ride it is, to be sure. I'm your host, Chris Hinckley. We are all Road Warriors, those who would esteem ourselves to be. And as always, feel free to dive into the chat area at roadwarriorradio.chattango.com for interesting and lively discussion. I think more and more people are starting to understand what that song sort of represents, particularly in the context of this broadcast. I think more and more people are starting to see that, as life continues to change, not for the better in America, living, according to by the courage of one's convictions and conscience is becoming more and more of sort of an outlaw concept. So that's unfortunate. And over the last couple of weeks in particular, with Independence Day in view, I've sort of touched on some of the issues with regard to that dilemma, I would say, that we face in this country. A lot of interesting things happening these days. You know, the whole Putin-Trump theater is, it's interesting. But, I was thinking about it this morning and yesterday in particular. You have just, strange things. The Fox exclusive interviews, for example, as I would call them, but at a local level, at a, grassroots level, your level, my level, what's happening? And is there evidence really in recent times of a group of people at a grassroots level getting together and saying, okay, no, This is not acceptable. There should be, I think, more and more today than ever before, if we are to hold fast to the sentiments of John Adams. And I keep sort of returning to that letter, John Adams to William Tudor, June 1, 1818. And what did he mean when he said, "I sincerely believe Mr. Otis, James Otis, to have been the earliest and the principal founder of one of the greatest political revolutions that ever occurred among men"? That is no small sentiment, no small soundbite. As I've said in recent days and weeks. And he said, "It seems to me of some importance that his name and character should not be forgotten. Young men should be taught to honor merit, but not to adore it." So, again, you know, it's I think strikingly ironic that Wikipedia has a page for founding fathers, United States founding fathers, and James Otis, according to John Adams, who receives top billing, first name mentioned, founding fathers, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Alexander Hamilton, John Jay. Even the Hamiltonians don't get top billing in today's America. The administrative fourth branch Hamiltonians can't get Alexander Hamilton in front of John Adams. I suppose that could be edited by anyone to change the order. But the point is, what about James Otis? I mean, according to John Adams, he was the earliest and principal founder. Wouldn't you think that he would be the founding father then in the context that John Adams sort of frames the discussion? It would seem so to me. And he should receive more than just a footnote. And so, again, as I've been saying in the past couple of weeks in particular, the reason this is so important, and the reason that I have continued to return to this subject, or not veer away from it, really, is because I think it, if I understand what John Adams was trying to convey to posterity, it really embodies what it means to be American. And, you know, maybe it's not a sentiment that's uniquely American. And maybe there are, you know, it's interesting. I've mentioned in the past working with folks in India, for instance, in web stuff over the years, about the last 10 years or so. I've found it fascinating that there are a number of folks that I have with whom I've communicated who remind me of a 1776 sort of American spirit. It's really fascinating, you know, very liberty-minded, very respectful of the autonomy of others, very considerate of making sure they give other people the autonomy and the freedom to make their own choices, which is refreshing, and both refreshing and ironic, I think. So, especially we hear what we hear about certain people in certain places, but the sentiment, again, that John Adams zeroed in on in his letter, that June 1, 1818 letter to William Tudor, the heads of the discourse of James Otis is something that I dare say we need to hold fast and dare not lose. This idea, like John Adams put it, the right to property, for example, you know, the heads of the discourse of James Otis, John Adams was recounting, and he mentioned a dissertation on the rights of man in a state of nature. He asserted that every man, merely natural, was an independent sovereign, subject to no law. But the law written on his heart and revealed to him by his Maker, capital M, in the constitution of his nature and the inspiration of his understanding and his conscience. And it's interesting, you know, that there really is a fork in the road at that point. You know, are we people who believe that there is a law that is impressed upon the hearts of all men, the law written on his heart and revealed to him by his Maker in the constitution of his nature? Or do we go down that fork in the road where technocrats believe that man creates all things, and of course, you know, the divine right of kings would fall into that category as well. Well, I'm the king, and so whether technocrat or God appointed, I have, you know, the divine right of kings to say and do whatever. So do we fall into the camp that believes that somehow man can do something as great or greater than what God has created, what God can do? Which is a foolish notion, by the way. I mean, you think about the simple examples, and some people have been hoodwinked. It's interesting, you know, you listen to what can be proved beyond a shadow of a doubt in court, for example, a court of law, supposedly, ostensibly. And those terms have, well, been under assault for a long time, but I would say as much or more so in recent decades and years than ever. But you know, the fairy tale of evolution, for example, is a great example that comes to mind. And the fact that people can believe such a thing, when you can go outside and you can see, for example, a tree, you can see all around you, if man stops doing what man does, if man stops, you know, pushing the boundaries of nature and building things and doing all those things, what does nature do? Nature just continues on. What man builds or does requires constant maintenance. You know, if man does not continue to show up and, you know, tend the garden and mow the lawn and paint the siding every year and tend to the roof, then things fall into a state of disrepair. Entropy kicks in. But you can go outside and see that if man doesn't do anything to nature in the wilderness, guess what? It continues on. And usually in a greater state of union and harmony. Trees don't stop growing. And so it's interesting. And a tree, in my opinion, is great evidence of God's manifold blessing, meaning that it's a blessing that keeps on blessing in a variety of ways. It's shade for creatures. It's oxygen, life-giving oxygen. It's a home for birds and squirrels and things. It's food. It's lumber. It's all kinds of things. And year after year, I mean, you think about an apple tree, for example. Year after year, it's bearing fruit, and it's a blessing. That's incredible. What does man do? Now, we look at all of this technology today, and machine learning obviously is a huge subject in today's world, and yet it's all so fragile. You know, there's all this talk there has been for years about, nukes detonated at altitude, for example, or a dirty nuke, a suitcase bomb, or something like that. And we've been subjected to all of these conjectures and speculation, which I don't subscribe to, because bad guys aren't going to destroy the infrastructure that allows them to propagandize the masses. That's not going to happen. So I think those are just more fairy tales to coerce and manipulate people into behaving a certain way. But, not even that. You look at the discussion of the power grids and things, and what happens from time to time. I mean, if there's a gust of wind and a utility pole is blown down, then suddenly there's a power outage and things shut down. Life shuts down. People can't. There's no banking. There's no, all kinds of things. I mean, if we didn't have power for a few days, think about it. Grocery stores would shut down. Banking, what would people do? It's all so fragile. And so, yet you walk outside and you look at what God has done. You look at nature, and there's a delicate balance of life, don't get me wrong, in different places, in different ways, but it's more rugged and more sturdy and enduring, which, again, I think is a provocative observation. So, back to this, John Adams, a dissertation talking about James Otis's defense of the Boston merchants. Against the acts of trade and as revenue laws, and against writs of assistance, specifically as tyrannical enforcement instruments, or tyrannical instruments to carry them into execution, as John Adams put it. Looking at that, and this, I mean, think about it. You've seen the pictures. You look at folks before the turn of the 20th century, and they had that, you could see that unquenchable fire of freedom in a lot of them. The very sentiment that I think John Adams, to which he was referring when he was talking about this subject. Speaking of James Otis, John Adams said he asserted that every man, merely natural, was an independent sovereign, subject to no law but the law written on his heart and revealed to him by his Maker in the constitution of his nature and the inspiration of his understanding and his conscience. His right to his life, his liberty, no created being could rightfully contest, nor was his right to property less incontestable. And you can see that in the eyes of certain folks. You go back far enough, you see that in their eyes, in the photographs. You wouldn't want to contest the rights to life, liberty, or property with these folks, because they would fight to the death for it. And yet, by degrees, we've been, that I think has, bad guys have been very effective in sort of breeding that out of the American people. And over the course of generations, of the past few generations, which is very unfortunate. And so we should return to that spirit. That and the golden handcuffs of society, conscripting folks through a variety of delicious gifts of socialism. Now the society is addicted to it. How can you get away from it? The Social Security card was never supposed to be an identification, or the number. It's never supposed to be used for identification. That's what we heard. And now try to find gainful employment without it. But you know, then that issue of gainful employment is an issue too, because there was a time where that wasn't considered fashionable, because again, it infringed on life and liberty. You know, if you're going to be a slave, that's fine, but that's what it amounted to. And you see that sentiment in the opposition to the 1765 Stamp Act, for example, which I've talked about. And now we've gotten to a point where, through the delicious gifts of socialism and, you know, again, in a sort of Galatians chapter 2 sense, the Judaizers creeping in and spying out the liberty to bring these free folks back into bondage. In that sort of fashion, now we see what I would categorize as a sort of weakened, anemic, and crippled society. And with each successive generation, it gets worse. And I don't know about you, but I look around and I see a great deal of hardship. I mean, as an example, the town that I was born in and grew up in off and on, small town, it's always been less than 5,000 people, depending on what's going on, you know, how the economy is doing. It's over the last few generations, it's been between 3,500 and maybe 5,500 people, 5,000. That's pretty small, kind of a small town, small community. And at one point, there was more than one fairly substantial mill. There were a few in the area, actually. Two big ones in the town I was born in, Libby, Montana, and then another one fairly sizable in a neighboring town less than 20 miles away. There was mining, and, you know, there have been a number of articles written about the W.R. Grace mining incident in that area and all of the adverse effects that it has had over the years, recent decades in particular. But you think about all of the how much of the economy was driven by that industry, you know, the natural resources, timber and mining in particular. And at one point, I think it was the Champion Mill, the big one, was St. Regis before. When that mill closed, it's my understanding that it was responsible for about 800 jobs that were lost, that one closure in a town that size. And to put that in perspective, back when the mill closed, say the average wage was around $20,000, which isn't out of the question for that time. That would be a decent wage. So 800 jobs at $20,000 average each is about $16 million in an economy of around 5,000 people. And to lose that is devastating, and you can see that in the community in the subsequent decades, and that's very unfortunate. However, with the other subject matter in view, that an anemic generation has grown up in America on the sugary diet of propaganda and rhetoric. Knowing all of that, I think maybe the hardship isn't such a bad thing after all. Who knows? You know, again, speaking of John Adams, his dissertation on the canon and feudal law, published in 1765, always comes back to my mind. And, you know, his point that he said there seems to be a direct and formal design on foot to enslave all America. This, however, must be done by degrees. The first step that is intended seems to be an entire subversion of the whole system of our fathers, which is exactly what I'm talking about, by the introduction of the canon and feudal law into America. And that's exactly the same thing that we see today. The canon, though, has shifted slightly, and now it's it's not so much religious superstition. I mean, we're not burning people at the stake, but you're crucified and burned at the stake of public opinion if you don't fall into line, if you don't acquiesce to public opinion. And so in that sense, it's very similar, if not the same. And there is a great deal of religious superstition in the so-called scientific community. And I agree with Carl Sagan, what he wrote 22 years ago. You know, as far as the superstition of pseudoscience is concerned, and we see more and more of that, which is unfortunate, you know. But the point is, like John Adams said, in these circumstances, in these times, maybe the scourge is a blessing. I don't know. As he put it in his dissertation on the canon and feudal law, he said, in a word, let every sluice of knowledge be opened and set a flowing. The encroachments upon liberty, which we feel today, in the reigns of the first James and the first Charles, he wrote, by turning the general attention of learned men to government, are said to have produced the greatest number of consummate statesmen which has ever been in any age or nation. The prospect now before us in America, he wrote, ought in the same manner to engage the attention of every man of learning to matters of power and of right, that we may be neither led nor driven blindfolded to irretrievable destruction. And I think the situation is very, very much the same today in America. We've lost sight of what it means to be American, I think. That's tragically unfortunate. What does it mean to even, what is this concept of freedom? Individual liberty, personal freedom, the freedom to be left the hell alone, basically, is what it comes down to. And like I said, that is a sentiment that John Adams was recounting, that as conveyed by James Otis in his defense of the Boston merchants back in 1761. And this is where this concept really took root. These folks, the colonists, were here and they finally said, you know, are we going to quit playing around and pretending that the things that we're being told that are not true are true? Or are we going to keep being gaslighted, or are we going to exercise our freedom and distance ourselves from this nonsense? And that lasted, well, depends on who you ask. But it's hard to argue that it has endured to today by whatever measure. Anyway, stick around. We'll be right back after a short break.
There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge...
Welcome back. I guess we'll turn a little bit to the current events. I suppose I need to talk about it a little bit for a minute. The coverage is mixed, depends on who you ask, obviously, which just makes me think it's more of the same old WWF theater, and I mean F, not E. The infamous summit in particular. And, you know, I'll throw in some mail. Talk about mail too. Unbelievable. You know, just unbelievable. Some of the commentary and stuff. So the Helsinki nonsense, you know, again, just theater. I don't even know how far I want to get into it. It's interesting. So I guess I will buttress the discussion on two sides with these juxtaposed talking points from Carol, the email of the Hal Turner radio show coverage, the article. The headline is, boom, Russian president reveals $400 million sent to Hillary Clinton, Hillary campaign. And so there's the excerpt of it's the translator actually speaking, which is interesting. Putin, you know, the translator for Vladimir Putin. So maybe we'll play a little bit of that versus the Fox News headline, Hillary Clinton hits Trump over Putin summit with a World Cup reference, which is interesting. It has to it's so bizarre and outlandish, all of it. It's hard to chalk up to anything less than just theatrics, you know? Over just the past 2 years, I think we've stacked up enough evidence. And even before that, you know, going back to Benghazi, for example, if it were you or I who had done a fraction of the things that Hillary Clinton is clearly guilty of doing and has been involved in, I mean, where do we start? You would be in prison for a long time. I would be in prison for a long time. No doubt about it. You know, people are sentenced to prison on a regular basis for white collar crimes far less significant than what she has committed. But Fox News runs a huge headline. Fox News. Not typically, you know, playing for that team or that side. Not that there are any sides, but you know what I'm saying. So they zeroed in on Hillary Clinton's tweet Sunday. And it's, you know, it read, great World Cup question for the president as he meets Putin. Do you know which team you play for? And so, you know, that to me is just another one of those esoteric sort of homages. And, you know, again, Ned Beatty, Senator Charles Meacham in the movie Shooter, there are no sides. I don't know, Democrats or Republicans, no Sunnis and Shias. There are only haves and have-nots. Anyway, that was interesting. So we'll play the clip of the Putin's translator basically translating one of the excerpts of Putin's exchange, one of his exchanges, and we'll talk about that and sort of the other side of this discussion. Anyway, if you're ready with that, go ahead, please.
Intelligence officers of Russia. I don't know the full extent of the situation, but the President Trump mentioned this issue, and I will look into it. So far, I can say the following. The things that, off the top of my head, we have an existing agreement between the United States of America and the Russian Federation, an existing treaty that dates back to 1999, the mutual assistance on criminal cases. This treaty is in full effect. It works quite efficiently. On an average, we initiate about 100, 150 criminal cases upon requests from foreign states. For instance, the last year, there was one extradition case upon the request sent by the United States. So this treaty has specific legal procedures. We can offer that the appropriate commission headed by Special Attorney Mueller, he can use this treaty as a solid foundation and send an informal, an official request to us so that we would interrogate, we would hold a questioning of these individuals who he believes are privy to some crimes. And our law enforcement are perfectly able to do this questioning and send the appropriate materials to the United States. Moreover, we can meet you halfway, we can make another step. We can actually permit official representatives of the United States, including the members of this very commission, headed by Mr. Mueller, we can let them into the country and they will be present at this questioning. But in this case, there is another condition. And this kind of effort should be a mutual one. Then we would expect that the Americans would reciprocate and they would question officials, including the officers of law enforcement and intelligence services of the United States, whom we believe are, who have something to do with illegal actions on the territory of Russia. And we have to request the presence of our law enforcement. For instance, we can bring up the Mr. Browder in this particular case. Business associates of Mr. Browder have earned over $1.5 billion in Russia. They never paid any taxes, neither in Russia nor in the United States. And yet the money escaped the country. They were transferred to the United States. They sent huge amount of money, $400 million, as a contribution to the campaign of Hillary Clinton. Well, that's their personal case. It might have been legal, the contribution itself, but the way the money was earned was illegal. So we have a solid reason to believe that some intelligence officers accompanied and guided these transactions. So we have an interest of questioning them. But we can that could be a first step, and we can also extend it. Options abound. And they all can be found in an appropriate legal framework.
And did you direct any of your officials?
So, yeah. And there's, you know, there's a great deal of broader context. But, you know, really, you know, like all of these sort of demonstrations, I can't help be brought back to Edward Bernays' words, you know, Vance Packard's The Hidden Persuaders, chapter 19, The Engineered Yes. You know, the guy who wrote the author of The Engineered Yes, quite literally in a sense. The engineering of consent is what it was referred to, but that's really disingenuous. It's interesting, you know, I spent some time in court yesterday for basically their for moral support, I guess you could say, and for someone I hold in high regard. But it was interesting, you know, watching the proceedings. It was a circus, really. And so I'm reminded of this, you know, this whole engineering of consent was sort of what the proceedings most embodied or represented, in my humble estimation. It was a circus, and justice was not served by any by any stretch of the imagination, I would say. there was a great deal of revenue making and deal making, and it's interesting how what the language is used these days, and it just, gosh, you know, some things are new, but then again, you know, everything old is new again, if you know what I mean. And so what I'm referring to specifically, or thinking of specifically, is the sales pitch that was given to folks who were waiving certain things, you know, or plea bargaining. And, you know, first of all, these attorneys, the bar issue notwithstanding, and all of it, the things, you know, that people have discussed, we've discussed on this broadcast, the robe is strange. Why the robe? Seems religious. And, you know, they'll tell you, well, it's not exactly, entirely, or, you know, whatever. Well, then don't wear it. Why? What's the point of it? And, you know, what are the, what do you call them? I can't even think of it now. You know, the ornaments adorning the top of the flag and the gold fringe and all of that stuff. That's all a different discussion. The eagle and the, you have the eagle, the ball, and the, gosh, I can't think of the pointy thing. That's not what it is. Anyway, all of that aside, the deal making that goes on is just shocking. People are convinced, speaking of the engineering of consent, people are convinced, and you hear them say these things. You know, it wasn't as bad as it could have been, right? Or it could not have been. You know, if you examine the facts, before you came in and you got the sales pitch, you were of an entirely different mind. And then you got the sales pitch and, you know, you think you got a pretty good deal. It's a deal, but that's what it is. It was a contractual arrangement, quite literally. You bargained and bartered. You know, it's kind of like that situation, you know, a certain rugged fellow was deceived into bartering away his inheritance, you know, capitulating in this context, the contemporary context, capitulating and acquiescing always, you know, like just servile, gutterly knaves. It's really sad and unfortunate. Anyway, listening to the language, it's astonishing. The sales pitch from the bench. Okay, so, you know, agree to, you know, you're gonna plead guilty, basically, even though it's usually it's the offered plea. So I'm guilty, but I'm not, unless I offend later. It's total behavior modification. It's total psychological or social engineering, psychological manipulation, and revenue making. You know, just a society of obedient slaves, basically. And I don't know. For those who've seen this, you know what I'm talking about. For those who haven't, you should go watch and see what you think. Think about it in the context. You know, listen, for example, as I did yesterday, to petty and trivial sort of offenses, you know, bench warrants being issued for these things, and then wonder to yourself, $75,000 in bench warrants for, you know, fairly inconsequential misdemeanor offenses. I don't know about you, but that sounds excessive to me. So whatever happened to the Eighth Amendment? Excessive bail should not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted, like sticking people in a hole for months while they await trial. You're not guilty, but you know what? Not yet. I mean, you haven't been found guilty, but you're going to be stuck in a hole for a long time. It's interesting. Speaking of the feudal system. So these deals, you know, I'll cop a plea, the offered the Alford plea, and the Alford plea bargain. Guilty but innocent. Exactly. Really? And, you know, there is a biblical connotation to all of this too. It's very interesting. You know, that's a whole different discussion. He whom the Son sets free is free indeed. But, you know, this presumption of guilt, gosh, that sounds like something, doesn't it? Oh, yeah, the ministerial, inquisitorial, feudal system about which John Adams was warning us in 1765 in his dissertation on the canon and feudal law. Ministerial, inquisitorial, feudal. Guilty until proven innocent. Well, how do I do that? It's like the old, you know, how do I prove a negative? How do you do that? When basically the deck is stacked, you are guilty until you're proven innocent. Well, how do I have to prove I'm innocent beyond a shadow of a doubt? I thought I was innocent until proven guilty beyond a shadow of a reasonable doubt. What happened? I asked rhetorically. So listening to these statements, it was just astonishing and, you know, painfully ironic. The warnings that we've been given, there were vestiges of trying to hold the line, a gentleman who wouldn't cross the bar and had an interesting shirt on, jury nullification, and a bunch of cases cited on the back of his shirt. That was interesting. But, you know, who understands all of that? And there was a lot of talk of waiving rights to speedy trial. But I'm sure no one knew what they were talking about or what that term of phrase was referring. You know, at best, maybe there were some folks who I kept wanting to pull out a pocket constitution and ask, you know, specifically about the Eighth Amendment. Excessive bail, excessive fines, where are we here in that? Or as far as speedy trial was concerned, the Sixth Amendment. Are we talking about the Sixth Amendment, or are we somewhere in administrivia land? Because you and I know the real Bill of Rights that is alluded to but never, almost never spoken of specifically in that administrative environment is the Administrative Procedure Act of 1946. And can I prove it? Yes, I've mentioned it. The two, just two simple proofs. The fact that on the Senate floor in 1946, Senate Judiciary Chairman Senator Pat McCarran said Senate Bill 7, which became the Administrative Procedure Act, the purpose of which is to improve the administration of justice by prescribing fair administrative procedure. Look up William Willoughby and understand what all of that nonsense means. Anyway, he said Senate Bill 7 is a bill of rights for the hundreds of thousands of Americans whose affairs are controlled in one way or another by agencies of the federal government. 1946, you know, on the heels of the FDR administration, the New Deal and all of that nonsense, social insurance program and everything else, suddenly hundreds of thousands of Americans' affairs were controlled in one way or another by agencies of the federal government. You engineer a crisis, introduce your ostensible solution, and arrive at a new Bill of Rights. And that's what he said. And I have mentioned on this broadcast, we played clips. I went and got the audio after it. I was in court years and years ago, again, in support of someone whom I respected. And she was cited for walking her dog without a leash. And the business owners in the town knew her, but one of them was disgruntled, you know, chagrined by the leashless dog. The rest of us have to follow rules. That gets back to crabs in a pot. You know, some people resent others' conviction to live by the courage of their conscience, so to speak. And so, you know, we'll try to lash out. If I'm not going to be able to do that, then you can't either. So I'm going to tattle on the nanny. I'm going to tattle on you to the nanny state. Anyway, so she was in court, and she said, "I'm not prepared." She was defending herself, and not representing herself, but defending herself. And she did not have the assistance of counsel, as it were. Anyway, she asked for a continuance, and the judge, a cagey magistrate, actually, he said, "I'm willing to grant you a continuance if you waive your right to a speedy trial." And she said, "I'm not waiving any of my rights." And a public defender heard all of this, and as I've said before, they walked out into the hall, came back in a few minutes later, and he said, "Your Honor, while my client is adamant about preserving her constitutional right to a speedy trial," which was an erroneous statement, by the way, he said after that, "she is willing to waive her administrative right to a speedy trial." And I was shocked, dumbfounded. Looked around, I thought, surely everyone else is shocked and amazed. Nope, no one understood what they heard. Stick around. Second hour coming up. We'll be right back.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.